You artists have a special relationship to beauty.
Beauty, like truth,
brings joy to the human heart.
Beauty is an invitation to savor life
and the dream of the future.
Beauty is a key to the mystery and a call to transcendence.
Beauty is the vocation bestowed on you by the Creator.
And the gift of artistic talent.
None can sense more deeply than you, artists.
Ingenious creators of beauty that you are.
That beauty will save the world.
Welcome back to Letter to Artists, brought to you from the vault at John Paul the Great Catholic University in Southern California. This podcast is inspired by the beloved St. Pope John Paul II's Letter to Artists, hoping to unite a community of creative Catholics to encourage one another to use our artistic talents to impact culture for Christ. I'm your host, Bailey Garland, and I'm super excited for today's show. I'm always super excited. I just noticed that. But today, I am still super excited. We are going to be having on Donovan Bacon. He is a student here at JP Catholic, and he's got a lot of awesome artistic talents. So I'm not even going to have a really big introduction for him because I'm just going to let him share with you all that he's about. I titled this Letter to Improv Artists, and I think it's going to be something super awesome that you're going to want to stick around for. This is the Letter to Artists quote. So these are St. JP2's words. From the chaos, there rises a world of the spirit. These words of Adam Mickiewicz, written at a time of great hardship for his Polish homeland, prompt my hope for you. May your art help to affirm the true beauty which, as a glimmer of the Spirit of God, will transfigure matter, opening the human soul to the sense of the eternal. I think this is such a great quote to be guiding us today, so we're going to enter into our conversation in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Welcome, Donovan.
Well, hello. Thank you for having me, Bailey.
I'm so excited that you're here. It's really funny for all of you listening. I just told Donovan that rarely anything goes well. Actually, I told him two horror stories of things that were going wrong during podcasts. And then you don't know it because it got cut out, but there was something that happened right before. I just welcomed him in. So he's coming in probably nervous, but we're going to jump right in. So Donovan, what is your favorite play? Just starting us off, diving right in.
Goodness gracious, favorite play. I never seem to have favorites, honestly, because it always seems to be, it just changes from like day to day, moment to moment. It's usually whatever the last really awesome thing I saw was, which I think, I'm trying to think, the last play, favorite play.
That you've read, seen, acted in?
I think right now it's Henry IV, Part One. Shakespeare's Henry IV, Part One.
Super specific.
It is a little specific, but that one has stuck with me for a while, but it's also just, to me, a great example of, it's a history play, but it carries in facets of drama and comedy and just more realistic storytelling without genre almost, which is one of the things I think is so fascinating and amazing about it, is even in every different realm of that play, you get everything. And it's fantastic.
What's a very baby synopsis of it for those who aren't as cultured?
It primarily follows the son of King Henry IV, who just usurped the throne of England from his predecessor, Richard II. And his son, who in the play is called Hal or Harry, is going around, he's just being very raucous, and he's spending a lot of time with the sort of quote unquote lowlifes of the time, and living with peasants and drinking at this tavern all day, all night. He's with women, he's getting drunk, he's making fun of all sorts of people and pulling scams on people and robbing people. He even assists people in a little crew of his to become highway robbers at a point.
Wow.
And all of this craziness is happening. And in the background, there's a revolution brewing between the lords, I think in the north, who are trying to overthrow King Henry IV and all of that chaos. And Henry's trying to get Hal to stop being such a twerp. And they're kind of going back and forth. And he's like, you got to grow up, man. And Hal's like, but I really like it here. And it culminates in this epic battle between the revolutionary prince who King Henry actually admires and Prince Hal, who King Henry basically sees as a waste and a mistake almost.
Wow. So now that we know that you really like the drama.
It's a really funny play though. It sounds really terrible, but.
I'm just teasing you. But now that we got a little insight into your favorite play of the moment.
Of the moment.
Of the moment, stressing. Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Who is Donovan Bacon with a cool name like that?
Well, the short answer is for what I do, I'm a student at JP Catholic, like you said, currently a junior, going into my third year now. I'm studying acting specifically, but I'm also studying screenwriting as well. Though I'm not studying it at the moment, I have also dabbled in music and music composition, as well as directing for the stage, which is... Those four things are a large part of where my passion is. And I've spent a lot of time working in various aspects of especially theater, though I've really cherished the opportunity that I've had here at JP Catholic to branch out into more film-related
projects. Mm-hmm. That was something new that you hadn't done since being here? Yeah. Or until being here?
I'd done a little bit of voice work, a little voiceover work, a little bit of, and then just sort of for fun music videos like you do in high school, but nothing really serious, nothing really where you put everything you can together and really work on something.
So where are you from, Donovan?
I'm from West Virginia in the Eastern Panhandle, which some West Virginians don't consider West Virginia, but to heck with them. I'm from I would say a small town, but it's not even a small town. It's just a zip code called Kearneysville.
That's funny.
Yeah. We don't really have a town. The closest thing we have is just a collection of houses at a cross. What's the word? What do you call that?
Crossroads?
Crossroads. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I can speak English. but I just sort of live next to cornfields and cow farms.
Nice.
I'm not a cow farmer, in case any of you are wondering. That's not what I do. But
he's an actor, not a cow farmer. What were you always Catholic? Did you have a conversion, a reversion? Are you cradle Catholic?
Yeah, I was blessed to be raised Catholic, primarily by my mother. My father, as well, was also born and baptized Catholic, but has since not been as prominently going to church, been as practicing in the faith, unfortunately, but we're working on that. We're working.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been raised Catholic. I've been Catholic my whole life. As many cradle Catholics, I'm sure, can relate to, there's always a time in your life where you kind of, if not turn against God or fully doubt God, there's this sort of period where you just kind of stop caring as much. And I've definitely had that period in my life which funnily enough coincided with a big emotional deficit in my life several years of my life where it's just sort of like reality doesn't function right, and my mind just decides to not work, you know.
Yeah.
And you just kind of shut down, and that's not fun. And I met a friend one day who, through the grace of God, was able to really turn me around in a few nights, funnily enough, and point me back toward, hey, this is reality. You don't suck nearly as much as you do. And yet also you do suck pretty bad. You got to fix that, buddy. So here we are. But from there, it's just kind of as Professor Lee Eske, chair of acting here, likes to say, it's a sea of cultivation with moments of growth, big moments of breakthrough, but it's a lot of cultivation. And that's, looking back, that's been a lot of my life as a Catholic and as an artist as well, is just moments here and there where I can see, that's a real moment of something. But for the most part, it's just slowly growing from those moments into the next moment, into the next moment, into the next moment.
A
lot of moments.
Oh yeah, that's beautiful. I mean, what a powerful image that he's given to you. I haven't heard anyone say that that he has said that before.
Oh, really?
And I really like that. Yeah, just that image of like the soil, even though you are not a cow farmer or a corn farmer or anything like that. Just cultivating that soil and for that little sprout to just shoot up silently, right, in the night. And then you realize it's there in the morning. And it's like that is that growth after years of cultivation often. Well, that's awesome. Well, it's fun to have you all the way in California on the other side of the country from your small zip code town in West Virginia. What was kind of that in-between link? So I'm guessing Cradle Catholic, all those things were an art school that all led you here. But how did you get, I've got you specifically on today to talk about improv, which I know is kind of affected multiple areas of your creativity. But let's start in the theater sense. And can you define improv to us or how you got involved in it, that whole window?
Yeah.
How I got into it and what it is. Let me start with a more basic idea of what I think it is. Is to me, improv is, I think in a basic sense, improv is the most raw form of any kind of art, in that it's used in everything. Whether we always recognize it or not, it's there. Like even what you and I are doing right now, this is improv,
yeah.
Right? Like whether or not we're performing it, we're improvising. We don't know what's going to come next. Like, I don't know what you're going to say. I don't know how you're going to react to what I'm saying. You don't know what I'm about to say. It's like, we have no clue.
Right.
All we know is who we are and who we think the other person is and what the environment is, and we just talk and do and whatever, right? And mm-hmm. that's improv at the basic level. And that can be transformed and that can be used into any kind of art, any kind of media. And that's, to me, that's what I like about it so much. And it's funny, you asked me about like theater. That's not how I got into improv, funnily enough. That's where I use it the most, definitely. But I first had my first exploration into improvisation and how I can use that and what that can do for you in music. I used to be, several years ago, I used to be the organ scholar at my church. And as part of that, of course, I would play the organ for masses at times, or I'd cover from the organist if he needed me to. And one of the first things before I did any of that, when I was still just learning how to play the organ, my teacher, he had me playing on the organ. We were practicing or whatever. We were reviewing the stuff I'd gone over that week. And he just takes the book away at one point. He says, play something. I'm like, what? What are you talking about? Just play. So there's nothing up there to play. He's like, nah, just put your hands on the keyboard and just start playing. I was like, okay. So I just started playing something and sounds come out because it's an instrument, right? And so I start playing and I'm like, okay, well, maybe it would sound good if I did something like this, and just sort of exploring the area. And then I hit a point where I was like, oh, that was the wrong key. Like that was out of tune. That wasn't, like it was a sharp when it should have been like a natural or a flat or something, right? And he's like, no, don't stop. Play it again. I'm like, what do you mean play it again? It was wrong. He's like, no, it wasn't. You're making it up. It's all right. Mm. Everything is correct. It's improv. You just do it. And so I'm like, okay, so I hit it again. And then what I began to discover is I took this and just started doing it on my own in my own practice time, as I would hit things and I would hit the wrong notes, so to speak, right? Or what I thought were the wrong notes. And I hit them again and realized, oh, that's an opportunity for a key change. Or that's an opportunity for an odd dissonance that can then transform into a beautiful crescendo, into a cadence and a chord to finish off the entire piece. And it's like, that's brilliant. But I thought that was wrong. It's
right.
Like, no, it's not wrong. Keep going. Keep going. Hit it again. And it reminds me now of something Michael Caine, I believe, once said. He was talking about improv and he said to like use the difficulty. Mm. It's the same kind of thing of just keep going. And so I discovered improv in that and I used it there. And that's where I really started to get into that mindset of the sort of just keep going, use whatever you get, just let yourself roll, just let it run. And then in theater, anybody who's done any kind of acting in theater or anything knows theater games, right? They're the huge part of of theater, and it's awesome. I love it. I love theater games. Many of them are improv based, right? And a lot of people I've talked to like are either scared of improv or they just don't like it, whatever. And it's always funny to me because I understand on a certain level, like actors, we like scripts a lot. We like to know what's coming next because it gives us a certain amount of security. And what improv has a tendency to do is force us to let go of that security and just say, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to do it anyway. It's like you're just handing everything over completely to your partner, to God, to your instincts. And that's what a large part of all of those games are training you to do, is to just kind of, I don't want to say go with the flow, but that's kind of what you're doing.
Right.
And that there's a certain point where once you get past or let go of the fear that arises with improv, the tendency to kind of shut down and close yourself off and be like, okay, that's, I'm not doing whatever it is correctly. I'm not hitting the right note. And just like, well, use that, do it anyway. There's a certain freedom of just like, it doesn't matter anymore. It's all, you're just kind of floating in space almost, and you just kind of do whatever, and it's fun, and it's, and you're like flying. And I think that's really what attracts me to improv. And that's where I found that moment. I was like, okay, now I have to do this. I can't stop doing that. Cause that's like life on steroids, but it's like, but in a funky way you can, it's like you're playing as a kid again, which is the thing that we're constantly trying to do as actors. We're trying to be like children, right? It's like God even says, like, be like the child, let the little children come to me. It's like all of that. And so we're constantly reaching for that as actors too. And improv, like in a certain way, forces you to get there. It's like, if you can't get there, figure it out.
Yeah.
Cause you have to be.
Yeah. I think that's so powerful because in the world, like as you were speaking of improv and you were saying, like you have to surrender to God, to your scene partner, to the world. I just think that's, I mean, what a analogy for life. I mean, we do, we have to react, right? I mean, we're often striving to try to take control of our day. And I think there's real good in that, creating our schedules. As human beings, we need that routine and we need to, but to be fully alive is oftentimes responding to the situation in front of us, right? And as actors, I know you guys talk about that a lot. And there is probably nothing truer than when something goes wrong. You're training for when something goes wrong in the play, which would be to improv. I just think that's so cool. And to get there first with music, I feel is really powerful because, like you were saying, you could probably hear something wrong, air quotes that people can never see me doing, the wrong faster because of our ear and our, you know, like we can hear music, I think. I mean, I guess in the same way in the play, you can hear when the line is wrong, but only if you're holding the script, really. Whereas music, we can kind of tell that it's off by hearing it. So kind of what led you then from something scripted? I'm going to go to the theater train a little bit first, but I want to circle back to the music stuff. In improv, I know first in acting, there's the script and then acting equally with improv, but within improv there's like often sketches that are somewhat scripted or the games or something like that. Can you speak to that a little bit and how those differences work?
Yeah, for sure. So strictly speaking, the sketch comedy is not improvisation.
Okay. Right?
Because there is a script. However, big however, a lot of sketches come from improv, where like a lot of sketch comedy scenes and a lot of troops they'll perform all their skits, everything, all the bits they've got for that performance. And then what sometimes they'll do is they'll have a series of improvised scenes afterward where it's just kind of them trying something out, and they'll do it and they'll see how the audience reacts, or they'll see, okay, what did we do in this moment? What did we do in this scene? How did this work? Did that work? Was there a different choice we could have made that might've been funnier or better for whatever the genre scene is. And then they'll go for that, right? And the improv is an excellent way to work scripts, work scenes. And writers, we do that all the time, as we're just kind of like bounce ideas around, say things until something kind of sticks to the wall, right? Whereas the improv games are primarily used, or they're initial purpose, so to speak, especially as Viola Spolin created many of them. They were originally meant for training improvisation, just training those muscles, exercising them. And so that's kind of the key difference there. However, a lot of places, a lot of troops, especially if people have heard of Whose Line Is It Anyway, TV show, a lot of performances will use games as a way to just perform improv because it's fun.
Yeah.
And they, like, a lot of games are just great performance games because they're just fun to watch and there's a lot of silly nonsense going on.
Yeah.
So both end up in performance, but they have different functions, different uses that you can use them with. And then I think in a certain, but yeah, I think in a certain sense, I had a train of thought and I've lost it.
That's okay. I have a question that maybe this is kind of going to derail you. So if you find that train, jump back on it. But
let's go.
Do you see any parallel with what you were just explaining to now going back to your music? I almost see, and maybe I'm crazy, but like the improv games or practicing whatever as maybe what you were doing when your teacher kind of told you like, okay, just go for it now. But then the sketches as like you developing a new song, could that be true? I don't know. Do you compose music? Is that kind of how it works in the musical side of things?
At least for me, sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've written most songs that I've written, based off of something I just sort of sat down and played.
Yeah.
And then I was like, that sounded okay, or this area was cool, or I liked that chunk. Let me take that
right.
And build something off of it, or let me tweak these notes here. Mm-hmm. So that's definitely something I'll do.
And it sounds like similar to the games. It's like, oh, this game stuck. Like we always play this game. And so now with the song though, this chunk stuck.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think where I was going before the games stick these rules around you in a way slightly different than a script will do, where you can do anything you like, just as long as you stick within those rules. In a similar way with music, is like you can do, and oftentimes what they'll do in, I don't think it's done so much anymore, but something that used to be done in concerts and performances was they, at the end of everything, they would have, motifs written out on a piece of paper. Sometimes the audience would write these things out and they put them in a big hat, right? And hand them to the virtuoso or whoever was playing, right? The pianist or organist. And they'd hand them to them and they'd just pull out a motif out of the hat and they'd improvise an entire song based off that motif. And the only rule was you can play anything you like as long as you stick to that motif.
That's awesome.
And improv games are very similar things. Like you can do anything you like as long as you follow these rules.
That is so funny. I had no idea that they used to do that. And that's so cool because, like you said, there's something so freeing and truth and raw. I love that you said raw about an actor or a musician just getting to play with the skills that they have built up and being like, yeah, I know how to stay within these rules, but I can break them too. Like, what do you want me to do? And I just think that is like the true test of an artist in their craft is that type of thing. So I'm sure that's particularly fun. I love that you're so passionate about improv and kind of preaching it to your fellow peers as you go through these classes and everything. But I did want to bring up as well, I know you're a big fan of Shakespeare.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering how that all works and how do you kind of, because Shakespeare seems to have a lot of rules. There's the language and just, I mean, the whole piece is so classical. And then how do you reconcile these two worlds, you know? Or how do you flip back and forth?
It's fascinating. So it's really interesting you bring up like the amount of rules in Shakespeare because we don't often think about it. But if you were to just give a performance, like an improv scene performance, there are a lot of quote unquote unspoken rules, right? Where there's the, for improv, anybody who's done improv knows the fundamental rule of yes and. It's the sort of whatever my scene partner brings to the scene is correct, right? It's real. Whatever they say, like, that's the reality now. And then I have to add on to that. I have to heighten that and bring the new thing. So that yes and is always there. Off of that are built many different rules. They're called rules. There are a lot of, like you say, they're guidelines. They're things you can break if you want to, right? To me, Shakespeare is very similar to improv in a way, because not because the rules that are there are breakable so much as what improv, especially in the improv games, tries to do is you're given these rules and you're given these restrictions on yourself to bolster your creativity, to find a creative way out of that situation. And then that trains you to behave naturally in that scenario, right? It trains you to, okay, I have this really weird rule where everything I say, like one of the favorite game, my favorite games I love to play with the improv club here at JP Catholic is a game exploration where everything you say or do must provide us something we didn't already know as the audience. Well, if you can behave, if you can train yourself to behave naturally in that scenario, that unlocks a whole plethora of scene choices for you. And I think Shakespeare's the same way. It's all these rules that we have, all like the way you have to scan the lines, the way you have to play with coolness and passion, the way you have to find the thesis, antithesis, all of these crazy things that we're told to, it's like, you got to find this, you got to do this, and all of this like language work you got to do in the lines. You do all of that, and any actor knows this, is like you do a lot of this character work, and you do it so much so that it becomes internal and you don't have to think about it anymore.
Right.
And really, I think the best Shakespearean actors highlight this by they can be handed a Shakespearean script they haven't really studied, read it over a few times, and while they might not have it perfect, they've got a pretty good idea of how this is, needs to go, right? Or at least how they would play it, using all of those rules. And so it's the ability to behave naturally under those given set of rules, those given circumstances, is what I think really, at least for me, is where I find the switch back and forth. Is like, they're not so different after all. Yeah. I think improv, this is why I think it's really a fundamental part to any kind of art, is every art has rules. You just need to figure out how to behave in those rules.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I love when people can't see me. I'm just sitting here beaming as he's talking because I love Shakespeare. I'm a big fan of his work. I'm a big fan of performing his work. So that is so true. And I think I relate to that as an artist, but I've never articulated it or heard it articulated that way. It's a rule, but it's not a restriction. Kind of like even in the faith, we talk about that a lot, right? Like the rules form the relationship.
Yeah.
And if we don't have the rules, then we don't know how to live in the world. Like we just don't know. We're like, what are we doing? But that's the same in every art form and every task that we do. We always like, it's like just to learn a new experience of how to live in that and behave naturally. And so I just loved everything that you said. And it really resonated with me. I think that's so cool. But just before we jump into the second half of our interview, how do you find yourself getting into character then, whether it's for an improv skit or a game, or a Shakespearean show or a normal, more contemporary play?
Yeah. So every actor has their own method for doing that. Mine really begins, as it transforms from time to time, it becomes something different depending on where I am in my life at the moment. But especially right now, and really where it is most of the time, is it begins with relaxing. It begins with my body, is I need to be connected to it on a very deep primal level. I need to know exactly where I am physically. And then from there, I launch into the imaginary, the given circumstances, the lines, where my character is, what I'm doing. And then from that, I can build a more physical representation of it. And I like to incorporate both elements of my imagination and like delving myself and diving into the imaginary elements of the scene or the prep for the scene and physicalizing it in some way that I feel what it feels like to be there. So I'm not just sort of like sitting with like, if I need to go into the scene sad, I'm just sitting like thinking about, oh, what's something sad? It's like, no, I need to feel physically sadness. And more than just sadness, I need to feel physically, specifically, what is my character feeling right now? What is that sensation in my body feel like? I need to generate that, and then I can go forward. And that's going to help me not only play the scene, but understand the character so that I can move that through to the other scenes from moment to moment.
Is that so? Obviously, that's kind of you prepping to go into a scene. When you are doing an improv sketch, is it more reactionary? Do you still find yourself going into all those steps before you? Because a lot of times, right, you're like jumping into a scene or you've been tagged or called or something. How does that work in your brain?
That depends entirely on the situation. sometimes when we're called into a scene, like we're given a prompt, right? And so you kind of, if it's a random word, I'll be like, okay, what's the first thing that makes me think of? That's a fantastic game that I like to play is makes me think of, where you just sort of bounce off of whatever that thing makes you think of. And then I'll like, all right, let that affect me. And then heighten that, the way it affects me, heighten that. So whether it's physical, emotional, let that just be a train. And then I go into the scene with that. Because like you said, like you don't have a whole lot of time to build an entire magnificent character, right, of Shakespeare's, right, to go into, but you also don't want to do that, because if you do, then you've limited your scene partner's options with that.
Yeah.
So sometimes if I'm not the one starting, I'll be completely blank and I'll just be like an audience member watching my scene partner until something inspires me and I go, ah, that's who I am. And then I just keep discovering who I am throughout the course of the scene, throughout everything I do and say.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like there's a lot of room for impactful moments in improv and like kind of life discoveries as well. Have you found, if you don't mind sharing, like, do you remember a specific scene or something very impactful? And I guess any of your acting work, that just a specific play or character or sketch or something that was profoundly impactful for you?
Profoundly impactful. Well, it's interesting. We get a lot of, I'm not sure that's really the thing. Especially here at JB Catholic, but a lot of the sketches and the improv scenes you get are comedic. And I'm fine with that because I love comedy.
Yeah.
I love to laugh. If anybody's heard my laugh, they know I like laughing. But when I had the opportunity and the grace to study briefly with some teachers at the Second City in Chicago.
Cool.
And there's no emphasis on comedy, serious, nothing like that. It's just whatever happens, happens. And so I was in a scene once with a man and it was pretty serious. And then things kind of just got sad and dark. And I was like, oh. And without going into too much detail, because I don't fully remember the entirety of the scene, I believe there was a pool involved.
Oh.
Yeah, it was kind of weird.
Wow.
But I remember it being, it was just it wasn't super dramatic, super like weird crying on the ground, but it was just very real, very, oh, that's life, that's there, that kind of sucks. And to me, that was like, okay, that was a big moment for me in realizing every story is told in art, not just the big ones, not just Lord of the Rings. And even in Lord of the Rings, there are many stories that are told besides just Frodo's. But it's like everything, in a certain way, without being too cheesy, hopefully, yeah, everything matters, right? It's like it's all there. It's not just kicks and giggles. We're real here. We're real too.
Yeah. Oh, that's powerful. I love that line, every story is told, that you just said, because I think that's so true. And a lot of times we as actors feel this, I think, in a particular way, right? A lot of times when we're growing up, we want to be the lead role. We want to be the star. We want to be this and that. But as we get older and we're accepting especially I think in our growth as actors, and we accept that there are no small roles, because that you better be the best dang tree. And if I don't believe that you're a tree, get off the stage. Like, it's like, you know, every story is told. You have such a big impact in creating the world around you. And that tree needs to be there because it's going to affect the entire story. And if it wasn't, then the story wouldn't be complete. And so I love that realization that you had, especially that, not all stories are big ones in the sense that we find it big, again, air quotes that people don't see, in that sense of the word big. So, that's a profound reflection. So thank you for sharing. Now I'm just going to remind everyone of the, letter to artist quote that JP2 gave us from, his address to the artist. So I'm going to dive right into that. From chaos, there rises the world of the spirit. These words of Adam Mickiewicz, written at a time of great hardship for his Polish homeland, prompt my hope for you. May your art help to affirm that the true beauty, which as a glimmer of the Spirit of God, will transfigure matter, opening the human soul to the sense of eternal. And those were St. Pope John Paul II's words from his address. He quotes someone, Adam Mickiewicz, within it, the quote. So, but these were still Pope John Paul II's words. So before I say anything, Donovan, I just want to open up that for any personal reflection that you had after reading that and receiving that quote.
Yeah. Wow. There's a lot in there. so many pieces of that. I think the biggest thing, the first thing, which is, it's kind of a funny thing to me, is he mentions how like art is, trying to remember the exact words, but he talks about how art essentially directs us to that glimmer of God, right?
Yeah.
And it's, to me, that's a humbling message, but it's also in a certain way kind of hopeful to me, because it means I don't have to be that glimmer of God, right? I don't have to make that glimmer of God. I don't have to make what is beautiful. I have to make something that's going to affirm that beauty. Mm-hmm. I have to make something that will point towards God. I have to point towards God's grace and beauty and righteousness and all of that. I don't have to be like, this is it. This is God's awesomeness. It's like, no.
Yeah.
That's it. This is a thingy that's exists and pulls a little tiny infinitesimal small part from that. Maybe, yeah. Hopefully. We'll find out.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That is so true. And like, honestly, I just want to like affirm what you just said and pulling it back to the beginning of the interview. So that I love when it all connects. What you had said about, as you were twiddling those keys and you were like, well, that's not right. And your teacher was like, you made it up. It's all right. What a pressure off the perfectionist here in this episode. I feel like the freedom in improv, the freedom in that statement that you just said, that we are affirming the beauty that already exists. We're not Deus creator. We are not the original creator, no matter how creative we think we are, no matter how innovative we think we are, like we aren't. And it's humbling. You're right. Like that I can only reflect beauty. But it's freeing. It's freeing, yeah, to say that. To just give God back what is his already and being like, here you go. So I love that. I really like the part, that very first sentence that where he quotes the Adam Mickiewicz, from the chaos, there rises the world of the spirit. And so I think that ties in perfectly. Mm. Sometimes improv, you know, it can become chaotic or it's satirical in nature or something. How do you think that it can be still be uplifting or provide a moral good? Because I think a lot of times people see the world, I mean, they see satirical improv mostly, I think, at least nationally. There's a lot of big like television shows or whatever that show the satire. So I guess what are some reflections you have where it can still provide, that satire can still provide a moral good?
Yeah, I think it's tricky in a certain way of satire specifically, because it's mocking something usually. And mocking things is kind of hard. It's sometimes hard to argue the moral good of mocking something. But even in that, there's sometimes elements you can find of how it's not, they're not mocking it for the sake of belittling. It's pointing out like, this is, this is wrong. And to me, it's like, it's to me, as I said before, I love to laugh, but to me, humor is one of the most powerful tools we have, because you remember funny things. Usually, at least in my experience, people remember funny things more than they remember sad things. We have a tendency to try and block out sad memories, right? But the funny things were like, oh, remember that time when Joe like tripped over his feet and went sprawling down the stairs and then broke his nose? It was so funny, bro. It's like, we remember that. But if it was like Joe tripped over his feet, fell down the stairs and then like died, it's like, oh, okay. Like we remember that once a year on the anniversary of Joe's death. Yeah. The rest of the time we try to like think about something else, right? And it's painful. And I think sometimes it's not always appropriate, but sometimes humor can draw our attention to things we weren't looking for or didn't think were there to look for already. And there's a certain element of laughter, just kind of that, the joy behind laughter that can allow us to be more open to something that we would otherwise have not wanted to hear or not wanted to see, which is something that I think humor and comedy has a real power to do more than drama. As much as drama can make us really feel something, like really feel the depths of the passion and the sadness or the intensity behind somebody's life, humor can point at it and go like, this is ridiculous. Don't you get it? This is all ridiculous.
Oh yeah. And I think, as you were speaking to, I just kept hearing like humor is the search for truth, or satire is the search for truth. Like even that last phrase you said, like, don't you get it? And it's like, that question itself is a search for truth, you know, like trying to understand the reasoning or the matter behind the fact. I don't really know what I was trying to say there, but, just the truth there that's embedded. There was another thing you said, oh, come Holy Spirit, that I really loved. Oh, just the joy. I think sometimes too, and maybe this is it's a product, for lack of a better word, of our productivity, of our hustle culture. We don't like to take things for like literally what they are, like for joy to be joy itself and laughter to be good because it's good. Like it's laughter and the Lord gave it to us so we can laugh. a lot of times we're like, but what am I getting from it? Or we like go too introspective and we search too much for the truth. And it's like, well, the truth is it's funny and there's joy. Yeah. And
yeah,
Jesus danced at a wedding. Like, yes. And you can do it. Yeah. So I think there's a lot of good in just like being and acknowledging that that's just funny. I don't know why, but I'm laughing. And it's so there's gotta be a deeper goodness somewhere in there. So yeah, I really loved that, all that you said. Did you have more? I felt like maybe I cut you off a little early.
But what you just said reminded me, I wish I could remember the saint. There's an old story of a saint who, they're doing the Lectio Divina at this monastery. Part of me wants to say it's Saint Francis, but I don't want to say that because somebody's going to be like, oh no, it's this other guy. But, there's a monastery and they're doing like morning prayer, and all of a sudden just all the monks just burst out laughing in the middle of this prayer. And this one of the monks is just like, what are they doing? Why are they laughing? They should be praying. And this monk, I believe it's the same, like turns and taps him on the shoulder. And he's like, just relax. Laughter drives the devil away. Just give him space. Let him laugh. Yeah. It's fine. And that to me has been what you said reminded me of that, because it's something that I think sometimes we can think of laughter as being too, it can be something negative sometimes. I don't think we let it just be, like you said, laughter be laughter, let joy be joy.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think even like, it's so interesting how, I mean, the two faces that we can have even in our own hearts, the duplicity, because yeah, even as you were saying, laughter can be negative. I started to think of all the times people have probably experienced negative laughter, whether that's as a result of a bully or something like that, where they're embarrassed. It wasn't even like supposed to be negative laughter. Like no one was trying to make fun of them, but they just, oops, it was funny. Right. And then it's that humility. And I think that's so interesting how in our lives, just like, yeah, tears can come from laughter, but they can also come from these intense sadness the intense sadness that we might experience. And so I just think that's so interesting. There was no point of exactly going anywhere with that, but I do think that that's still on the other end, a good realization of being like, it's still a search for truth, right? Like, why are we laughing? And are we laughing as a coping mechanism or to experience just a joyful moment? So I think there's a lot to it, but yeah, just thinking back to this quote, I'm just going to read it one more time because I just think it's so good. From chaos, there rises the world of the spirit. These words of Adam Mickiewicz, written at a time of great hardship for his Polish homeland, prompt my hope for you. May your art help to affirm that true beauty, which, as a glimmer of the spirit of God, will transfigure matter, opening the human soul to the sense of eternal. So yeah, that even that last line, transfiguring matter, opening the human soul to the sense of eternal. What you have something.
I love that. That opening this human soul to the sense of the eternal is, I mean, it ties back to what a lot of us are taught told or say many times of like art should be directed toward the good, the true, and the beautiful. But we also talk so much about like the timelessness of art, and there's like that's the sense of the eternal. I love that because that phrase, there's so many layers to that that you could unpack. But the idea of, I think in, and maybe I'm biased because I'm a storyteller, but I think in every piece of art, there is a story, whether it's conscious or unconscious by the artist. And to me, that idea of like, there's the sense of the eternal is in all of them, is humanity in a sense. Like, we are all connected to the eternal, especially we understand in a particular way through baptism, right? But humanity is connected to God as being made in the image and likeness of God. And there's something that we can even, like, you look at, we talk like ancient stories like Gilgamesh or Beowulf or any of the mythologies from before Christ or the Old Testament, all of that. And you find things you can relate to and you really look at it and get past the sort of possibly archaic wording, right? And you really look at it, it's like there's a relatable aspect to that of like, what is it about humanity that transcends or goes past these thousands of years that we've had to supposedly develop ourselves? And we've developed wonderfully technologically speaking, right? But the same things upset us. The same things make us laugh. The same things make us fall in love with someone. The same things make us head over heels happy, screaming our heads off, right? Whatever that is, there's a certain level of humanity that hasn't really changed at all. And art taps into that. And really good art shows us is like, you are very similar to somebody who lived thousands of years ago. That, like, with totally different culture, totally different technology, totally different world. And you're very similar to this person. Like, in a certain way, we haven't changed at all, as much as we have changed. And that, to me, I think is like the most powerful thing that art can do, at least for me, is when I can look at something and be like, I'm just like this guy has no idea who I am. He didn't even know I was going to exist. Like, he couldn't have possibly imagined what the world was going to be like now, but I'm just like him. So what does that say about me? It's like, this story is it's too similar to my story in some cases, right? It's like we can still find that, and art is capable of making us empathize with beings that sometimes aren't even quote unquote human, right? Like aliens or dragons or whatever it is. It's like, but there's a human element. It's like, art shows us, in a certain way, art shows us humanity at its core. It's like, this is what it means to be human. And that, I think it does that through showing us like what is eternal about humans, and thereby we have a channel of what is eternal, what is the eternal, God is the eternal. It's like that, that I think is the first pathway art takes to show us God, which is, I love that about that, that quote, how he just brings that.
Oh yeah, that was, I mean, that was so cool. And I think, I mean, even all of that, actually, I was like, oh wow, we write this down, I can write that down. But yeah, that sense of eternal, and even, yeah, you just saying like it open, like God being eternity itself, and then how we're all interconnected throughout eternity. But also that it like, the it just, the idea of that, like we live on, and like we all influence each other. Like you said, like this man from thousands of years ago had no idea that like you were going to be here. So like, why would it matter? But like, to some degree, he cared enough about you, not knowing you were to exist, to create the thing that would somehow now move you, which is really cool. I think there's a sense of we're connected because like we acknowledge and appreciate the beauty that the other has left us, whether that's in some form of the human experience that we've all share throughout eternity. And I love that. I've never really kind of thought about it that way before, of like, there are some things that never change. You always hear like history repeats itself, but I've never broken it down to be like, oh yeah, we, all these things, like we still really share in common. Like a smile is universal. Tears are universal. Like certain things are universal languages. So it's just, that's really cool. So I guess my final question, it's a big one though. How has this gift of acting, of music, of improv itself in whatever aspect, however it's creeped its way into art, how has it helped or shaped or challenged your relationship with God?
That is a big question.
A big one.
Goodness. I think... in a certain way, it allows me to, so many words floating in my head, but none of them are quite right for what I'm trying to say. And I'm going to have to just ramble them all out.
That's all right.
And maybe I'll find the right one. Here we go. I think in a certain way, improv, much as how I said before, like you kind of have to let go of that fear of being wrong, yeah, right? And you just sort of like everything's correct. I think that has both gifted me and challenged me with letting go of being wrong when it comes to my relationship with God. And I'm a very scrupulous person, like wickedly scrupulous. It's but there's a certain element of, I said before, of like, you have to kind of hand over, like you can't come into the scene with too much. It's like that same, you have to, I feel like, at least for me, the only way I can find around it is I have to go into any conversation with God of like, hi, it's me. I don't know what I'm doing here. You probably do. I have no clue. So I'm just going to go until I figure it out. And so many times I've gone into adoration or just sitting down to pray in my own home or walking around in a park and screaming at the sky, right? Is what you do. And like, I'll go and I just start belting out questions or I just mind vomit of like, okay, here I am. This is what I understand about myself and my situation and reality as I know it right now. What, point me to whatever it is that you want me to see right now, whether I'm happy or sad or angry or whatever it is. It's like, it's me. And here, like my favorite, I think right now, like I said,
right now,
in this moment, my favorite verse that keeps coming back so often when I pray is, here I am, Lord, I come to do your will. Because that's the only thing I can ever seem to think consistently to say is, hi, it's me. I really want to do your will. I don't know how to do that all the time.
Yeah.
So you got to show me. And then I just go off of what it's just kind of a back and forth of what I think I need to do, right? Or I follow whatever threads I feel God's pulling me to follow. And it's improv is it stretches me, right, to just sort of accept my flaws and be like, okay, I'm going to hand over myself completely. I have to hand over all control, which is a big thing that I've had to learn and relearn in my life. Hand over control, give up control. You have to do that all the time in improv. You can't control the scene. If you do, you're doing it wrong. And I think, and the same is, at least for me in my life, the same is with prayer and with life in general. I have to hand over control to God, because if I'm trying to control it, everything goes wrong every single time. So, and that's what I find every time. And that's where I think improv is constantly reminding me, and God's constantly challenging me through improv to be like, okay, I'm just going to follow your lead. Like, you take the lead on this one and I'll follow you wherever you go, as long as I'm smart enough and you help me stay smart enough to follow your lead.
Mm. Oh yeah, Donovan, that was beautiful. And speaking of prayer, will you end us out in a prayer?
Oh goodness. Lord. Hi. We come before you as your children, your son and your daughter, baptized in your name. Guide us, strengthen us, keep us, protect us. We do not know the way. We know that you are the way, but we are blind, too blind, too often to see you. So we ask that you reach out your hand, guide us, grip us tight around our shoulders if that's what we need, but hold us steady as the waves of the foe come crashing down around us. We ask this for the sake of your name that you have sealed us with in the sacraments, and for the sake of the passion of your Son, Jesus Christ, our Lord. Amen.
Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. Thank you so much, Donovan, for being here with us, for sharing everything, for sharing your words of wisdom, your heart, and just your experiences with us. I really, really appreciate you taking the time right before on your break, donating your time to us. So thank you so much for being here. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, Bailey. It's been great.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. And for all of you out there, thank you for joining us. If you enjoyed today's episode, you should listen to more. So stay right here, whether you're on Spotify, Apple, or Google Podcasts, or if you're listening to us on the radio, check us out on one of those networks. Just type in Letter to Artists. You can also find out more about the show by following us on Instagram at Letter to Artists Pod. That's Letter to Artists P-O-D. Or visit us at the JP Catholic website. Just type in jpcatholic.com/go/podcast and you'll find us. And we want to hear from you. I want you to reach out. I want to interact with you. If you're a Catholic artist, I want to hear about your craft, about your story. So please send me a message on the socials or through the website. We want to keep these conversations going and gather this community of creative Catholics. Letter to Artists is proudly brought to you by John Paul the Great Catholic University, hoping to encourage you to use your talents to impact culture for Christ. I'm your host, Bailey Garland, signing off with some encouragement for your day. Be not afraid.
You artists who perceive in yourselves this kind of divine spark.
As poet,
writer,
actor,
architect,
sculptor,
musician, feel the obligation not to waste this talent,
but to develop it, to put it at the service of your neighbor and of humanity as a whole.
May the beauty which you pass on to generations still to come be such that it will stir them to wonder.
Society needs you, artists. The world in which we live needs beauty.